chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you this week? I am so excited for this show. I really am. We got some stuff to talk about. We've got some announcements to make, and we have a really, really good conversation with a friend of mine, Claudia Fimbris from many places. She's a well-traveled young woman. Right now is doing some amazing stuff out on the rock, out in Newfoundland. We're going to talk about Claudia a lot more and then have this conversation in a couple of minutes. Before then, like, how are you doing? I should do a check-in. You know, the holidays are on us. Hanukkah has begun. Christmas is coming. Solstice is soon. Other festivals are happening. You know, no matter what you celebrate in the world this time of year, I hope you're doing well, and I hope you're able to take some time to celebrate. I hope you're able to feed the people in between your own celebrations. It's this weird juggling act we bakers have in the holiday seasons where, you know, we'd like to hang out with family and do a whole lot of nothing, but it's the busiest time of year for us as well, so it's go, go, go. In our house, we celebrate Christmas. It's kind of low-key now that our kids are grown up and moved away. But we've been doing some things, you know. The box of decorations has been taken down from the shelf. Things haven't been put up on the walls yet. But now that we live in this apartment, our Christmas decorations have been condensed down to those few sort of heirloom things, those memories that you kind of get and you hold on to. So if you were to come visit, it would look rather kitschy, I believe, you know, because a lot of this is sort of handmade stuff. We've got our mistletoe, which is a little stuffed frog that hangs in the hallway, over top of the hallway. And you know, so you're supposed to smooch whoever is walking underneath it. We've got some decorations that the kids made when they were little. They are gaudy and in all the good ways. We've got snowflakes that Cindy and I made when we were dating well over 30 years ago. She took to the school and laminated way back then, so they're still in good shape, and we hang those. Instead of a tree these days, we just have a string that we put up across the big wall in our living room, and we hang all the ornaments that the kids made and all our favorite ones that we used to hang, but just sort of one of each. Goes up on that string to remind us of the tree that wouldn't work in this apartment. There'd be no place to put it other than maybe a spare bedroom, and then the cat would destroy it anyways. So we just hang stuff up on the wall high enough to torment the cat, but not so low that she can get at him. So yeah, so that's sort of our Christmas decorations. And it allows us to focus more of our time and attention on eating poorly. Eating the chocolate, all the chocolate, that we can find, we eat in December. So far, that's consisted of an entire tin of my sister's homemade turtle tarts, which she brought with her when she came to visit. It consists of a fruit cake, which isn't chocolate, but it's sweet enough that I've eaten an entire fruit cake already by myself because Cindy doesn't like fruit cake. On the weekend, our daughter Robin sent us a very heavy box of chocolate from England, all kinds of the kind of holiday Christmas chocolates and that kind of stuff that are in all the shops over there. And we've just been unashamedly eating them every day. When you have little ones, you tend to hide the chocolate up and you bring it down a little bit at a time. When it's just the two of us and we don't really care so much anymore, they're just out on the kitchen table, and every time you walk by, you eat some more. So yeah, I don't think any of this is going to last until the 25th. We're probably going to have to restock, and that's okay. I will announce my middle-aged man marathon plans in January to overcome how I'm going to feel then. But for now, I'm enjoying it and eating a lot of chocolate, and that's just fine. Okay, big announcement time. I am so excited to tell you about this. I've been working with Karen Bornarth at the Bread Bakers Guild of America for the past few months, and we are launching a new program in 2024 called the Bakery Leadership Circle. I'm super excited about this because this workshop is going to address two of the biggest problems that I've seen in my own baking experience, my own bakery ownership experience, and then with the time that we've done this podcast and had Bakers for Bakers, the online community, heck, for the time that I've been a member of the Bread Bakers Guild. So really, it's a problem that's been out there for the past 20 plus years. And what that is how do we get together as a group of bakery owners and talk about the things that really matter? Talk about the big rock issues, the big rock challenges that we face at the bakery. It's so difficult to do when you have just a couple of minutes over a cup of coffee or over a beer at a get-together. It's so difficult to do in an open online forum. You know, how do you get to really be vulnerable, and how do you get to really dig into the problems and spend some substantial time working with your peers on these big issues and learning from each other? And so the Bakery Leadership Circle is designed to do that. This is a four-month program, and we're going to get together with a small group of bakery owners, a small cohort, and we're going to get together like 8 times over 4 months. So it's this small group going on a journey together. There's going to be a lot of bonding going on in that small group, and a lot of honesty, and a lot of vulnerability, and a lot of, you know, real talk about the issues that we're facing. We've got some processes and we've got some tools that we're going to teach in the workshop that's going to help you problem solve and problem solve in a group. And these are tools that you can use and reuse as well, even outside of the workshop. The workshop is focused on what we're calling adaptive business challenges. And so these are the big rocks. It goes beyond, you know, sourcing equipment or how much are you paying for sugar, or, you know, even how do I set up a production schedule? How do I deal with the health inspector? The big challenges like setting a vision for your business, like staffing issues, like recruitment and retainment, like leadership with a capital L. There are lots of forums that you can get help on sort of the low level detail, the management type issues. But if you really want to develop as a business leader, there's not much out there, especially in the bakery space. So the Bakery Leadership Circle is trying to fill that need of saying, like, let's work on the big problems. Let's set some real goals for our businesses to move them forward. And let's set up some accountability and some tracking even after the workshop ends, so that we actually implement these ideas that we're coming up with in the group. The other thing that the Bakery Leadership Circle addresses is some feedback that I've received over the last couple of years about things like, you know, Bakers for Bakers, which is active and awesome and I'm very proud of. But it's true that in a public forum like that with hundreds of members, you kind of know a few people, but you don't really get to know anybody. And if you don't really get to know your peers, it's very difficult to be open and vulnerable with your peers. And so by working in a small group, you know, the cohort is going to stay together through the entire 4 months. We're all going to be sharing within the cohort. We're all going to be listening, sharing ideas. We can really get to know each other, and we can dig deeper and have more real conversations about what's going on at the bakery. And so that's the real goal of this, is to create a space and have a set of tools and techniques that you can be open and honest with your peers and work together to solve your problems and to help your peers solve their challenges at their bakery. The first cohort is going to go through, is going to start on the 4th of February, 2024. On Thursday this week, on the 14th of December, we're launching this on the Bread Bakers Guild of America website. And we're going to start taking applications to be in that first cohort right on the 14th of December. If this is something that you're curious about, if this is something that you're interested in, or if it's screaming out at you, yes, this is exactly what I need, I encourage you, go to bbga.org, check out the Bakery Leadership Circle, and if this is for you, apply. Apply in December. Make that leap, because the month of December, we're calling this sort of the priority decision time. It's like the folks that are saying, yes, this is exactly what I want. We're going to make sure that you've got top priority for getting into this first cohort. We're taking small groups in here. This is not going to be 50, 60, 100 people coming through the program. We want this to be small enough that you can get to know everybody in the cohort and that you can get to spend time with them and that you can build this a small network of people that you know and trust and can carry forward with them. So please, if this is anything that, if this is the kind of thing that you're interested in, I encourage you, go check it out right away. Go and apply. If you have questions, we're going to do some live Zoom calls and Q&A calls with Karen and myself. You can reach out to me directly, Mark with a K at riseuppod.com. You can reach out to Karen directly through the guild and learn about this. But I think this is just going to be such a huge opportunity for folks that are really trying to take their business and their leadership skills to a higher level. This workshop is really going to be a big deal for you. And I'm so excited to let you know about it. More information coming, but for now, starting the 14th of December, 2023, check it out on the Guild website. I hope this is the kind of thing that gets you excited. Okay, Claudia, so excited for this talk. Bit of context. I first met Claudia after we had closed Orange Boot Bakery. I worked for a very short time at a restaurant that a friend of ours ran, Milton Ribello. Restaurant's called Sky in Regina. And Claudia, I'd been baking there for like a week, and then Claudia was there, and she's making the salsa verde for the chilaquiles, and she's making some other things and making these amazing shrimp ravioli and stuff. And I got to know her a little bit, and boy, I really liked her. Like, she was just a consummate professional cook, you know, just an amazing cook, and very kind and gentle and calm. And you know, the restaurant did get kind of hairy, and she was just always like super calm and doing her thing. And then got to know her a bit more after I didn't stay at Sky very long because they didn't really need a baker, to be honest with you. And so when I started doing the backyard bakery project, Claudia and her husband kept coming to the house and picking things up. And we stayed in touch as she was moving around doing different things. But I'll tell you something about Claudia is every single time that there was something cool going on food-wise in Regina, she always seemed to be part of it. You know, if there's this food truck, oh, I hear they're doing amazing stuff, and we'd go to the food truck. Oh, there's Claudia in there cooking up a storm, right? And so she's always like that. Around the same time that Cindy and I moved out to the west coast of Canada, to Vancouver Island, her and her husband moved out to Newfoundland, to the island on the other coast of Canada, on the Atlantic side. I was kind of blown away because Claudia is originally from Mexico, and I thought, why Newfoundland and that? And we've swapped emails back and forth over the past couple of years, but I never really got a chance to find out what she was really doing out there in Newfoundland. And then a couple of weeks back, she sent me this video, which I will also link to in the show notes here, of a little news feature that someone had done that's up on YouTube about the store, Mamacita, that she has opened up, that her and Brad have opened up in St. John's. I was just blown away. It's like this amazing store, and then they're cooking food in the kitchen, and they're making food to order. And it just looked amazing. And it was also, it looked amazing and it was mind blowing. And it was also, well, of course that's what she's doing because she's an amazing woman. And of course this is something that I need to learn an awful lot more about. And so I reached out to Claudia and she came and we had a good chat, got caught up. I learned the rest of the story of their move to Newfoundland and the opening up of Mamacita and what it means to her to do this. And I'm so thrilled to get to share that with you now. So here we go. My talk with Claudia Fimbres from Mamacita in Mount Pearl, Newfoundland, just outside of St. John's. I was trying to do the math, how long it's been since I've seen you. It's been a while.
8 years?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Well, because, well, we've been out here 4 years now, so it's been a bit.
So maybe four? That's that long. That's time flies.
Yeah. Yeah, because your oldest has got to be about four or five now, right?
Four and a half.
Yeah, yeah.
The one that I get to see the most is your daughter because I follow her on Instagram.
Oh, do you?
Just a little bit. Yes, Robin. So I get to see a little bit of what's going on in you guys kind of thing.
We were just talking with her yesterday.
Oh, okay.
She's doing her thing.
Yeah. She looks very happy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And well, and so how have you been with the store and everything? That's quite the adventure. Hey.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that was on the plan always, like not the store, not what we're doing. It was on the plan. We came here to Newfoundland like 5 years ago and we fell in love with the province. We drove 4,000 kilometers and we said, let's move there.
When you came out there, it was just like, I'm just doing a trip out? Or did you have this plan that you were going to move to Newfoundland?
Not at that time.
Not at that time. We rent a car. We came here for 12 days and it was only Brad and I. I remember even back in that time, we were dating and there was no even kids in the picture, right? But like probably like a year after that we came, Brad mentioned that we should have a family. I remember that we were driving we were going to where we used to live in the north end of Regina. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I remember him saying like, you can think about it. And I'm like, I have nothing to think. Like, let's do it. I remember let's have a family after saying in the beginning, we were fine, right?
Yeah.
So that was like a year after we came here. But when we came here, he said, I don't know why, he said, let's move here in 4 years.
Oh, wow.
To Newfoundland. I don't know. It just makes sense to him. So we basically everything that we used to do in Regina was towards to make the goal saving, sell, and start over in Newfoundland. And literally 4 years after we came here. But when we came, there was no kids. There was no pandemic happened. So one of the cities in the province, it's called Buena Vista. It's beautiful. It's very small. Our plan was just to have a bed and breakfast, have like a semi-retired life, just serving there without like we were going to make some dinners every once in a while. Long story short, when we moved here, well, we have the kids. Pandemic has happened. Prices of the houses tripling here. So basically, you used to be able to have $120,000, a beautiful house, saying. And now with all this that has happened in the world, basically there's a bunch of refugees in here. A lot of people, locals have returned from Texas because of oil. Then the Fort McMurray fire happened. A lot of Newfoundlanders came back. So it was totally different than when we came that we said, let's move to Newfoundland. So if you used to have like 1,000 options, you're near down to 10 options, for example. And we decided to move to a bigger city because it was like we want to offer better schools for the kids, have them the opportunity to do something, not just to have like a small town life. So that's when we decided to move here and to move here in St. John's. So anyways, we were looking. We check a lot of places and this just popped up on Facebook. Somebody was selling their business that it has a kitchen and it just makes sense because I was still on maternity. Brad was already back to work as a full-time cook, but that was totally basically what we said that we weren't going to do. We had to do it, right? Because right. We said like, we don't want to have bosses anymore. We want to be your own bosses. So, but everywhere where you check, it was like to make like $100,000 investment, and you still have like basically nothing. You have only the kitchen, and you still have to have the lease and investment, blah, blah, blah. But this opportunity came. It was pretty reasonable price, a functional kitchen, pretty much ready to just start. And while that happened, I remember going to every ethnic store in the city and checking what's there to offer. So we moved to the house that we live now on September 8th last year. And on Day of the Dead, there is a bread that is very traditional from Mexico. So, and that I used to do a lot in Regina. So anyways, so I was like, I'm going to start selling. I'm going to start making money. And I start promoting. There is like a Facebook group that it's for Latin people. And I was just posted in there. It's like, hey, like this Saturday, blah, 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 I'm going to start baking Day of the Dead, pre-orders. This is the price. Pick up my place. And I have like 5 orders, for example, right? And then it's like, and then, oh, I'm going to start selling Saturday, Sundays. And people, instead of 5, it became 10. And I start basically every weekend since September up to when we opened the restaurant, you used to be able to grab food from our home. And people start liking it. It started spreading the word. And then Canadian people came on board because it was only Latin people that they say, well, I'm from Nicaragua, but I want to try because it's very similar. Or I do like Mexican food, so I'm gonna give it a try. So while all this happening, I already have searched like in all the stores what's there to offer. And I was able to keep doing the Mexican food because we came here in a motorhome. So we have ingredients that we brought from Mexico. But I was telling Brad, it's like, when I run out of them, I have nowhere to go get them in here. Because literally in here, Mark, it's like if you're not in Canada. It looks like another country. It's like, honestly, you're left out. It's bizarre. It's very beautiful in many aspects, but it's honestly, it's things are very different. And one of the things is that the supply of things, saying like if something is on sale or if in season, once it sells, it's sold. And you don't have it for, you could have less, if something break down in mainland, you don't have, I don't know, bananas for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something wow. like that. It's just like weird. Or you talk to people in here that they say like, I never met more than one type of apple because they didn't used to have. And they have like all the local food. It is a lot with a lot of salt, preserves and pickles, things like that, because that's back in the times that how it used to be, right? But anyways, that's where it come up on board. Like, well, we know what we do. I knew that the kitchen that I could represent the most, it was Mexican. And just to make it feasible, it was like, well, we need to open a smaller store to make it legit, not to offer like Tex-Mex or to offer the same that everybody's offering. Because I was like, well, I'm not going to go and compete with nobody that is established, even the local people, because we're nobody here.
Right.
So anyways, it was like a small kitchen, but it happens to have like another smaller kitchen in the back. And long story short, we rent the 2 places. We joined them together. We put a small store. Literally, when we used to stand in what it's our business now, it's basically, if you were more than 3 people, that was packed. Because it was that small, like, you know. But it's like just in Mexico, when you go to like a family business places at home kind of thing, you have a lot of everything because, I don't know, that's the culture, you know, like you offer a lot of things. So that's us. So we used to offer like about 200 products in that. It was like, I think it was 3 meters by 2 meters, something like that, what the customer could be. So you could imagine everything. It was bizarre for everybody, but for the people from Mexico, it was like, this feels like home. This tastes like home. It smells like home. Sound like home, because it's always like Latin music playing, and it's just it's just amazing. And then it's like happens to be there is like some people from Guatemala working in here because the high season, a lot of Mexican people for the fish season. So everything it has been matching out on times. And next to us, there was a meat store, convenience store that has been there for the longest time that they shut down like 40 days after we opened.
Oh, wow.
Same parking lot and everything. Mm-hmm. So they had like a walk-in fridge because that's their nature. So that gives us the opportunity to have like a huge walk-in fridge where now we became kind of suppliers for a Mexican inspired restaurant. So now we do production for that. Long story short, that's what it has allowed us to grow, like grow physically where we are and to grow where we're becoming a brand, because now we are like in 5 different stores. Because we sell cookies, breads, preserves, marmalades, food to go, frozen meals, ready to bake items, ready to heat and eat items. We have daily specials. Basically, we're all over the place. But I don't know, it just has, that's the way to go with things, you know? Like, I mean, well, you have been a business owner, right? Sometimes you have, otherwise you wouldn't have much more customers crossing your door, right? So you knock on doors, we've been knocking doors, and things have been working out.
Oh, good for you. Oh my gosh. Well, and sometimes those opportunities come up and it's like, well, if there's a walk-in fridge right next door, I guess we have to do something, right? Like you don't, it might not be on the plan, but sometimes it's sort of like, okay, we need to readjust the plan a little bit. Because these opportunities don't just come up. Yeah.
Yeah. No, like we buy equipment and it's like we are selling now that equipment because it's like, well, now we don't need it because we're leasing this bigger equipment that allowed us to offer more, you know, like to really do saying like in order for us to offer good prices, we need to bring pallets to here because basically everything that we offer, it has to be authentic from their country. In order for us, like in our philosophy, but in order for us to be attractive to the customer, we need to be a bit more approachable than whatever you can find online.
Right.
So in order to do that, I need to bring pallets at a time.
Yeah.
So the walking makes just sense because saying like the corn tortillas, that's one of our main products. We buy it by pallets. So we can order it because it's refrigerated. And I'm not afraid to say like one time we order 60 boxes because that's how we make our chips, that which is our best seller, you know? So it's just like, basically things have lined up without a plan, you know? And sometimes it gets more chaotic, you know, like a lot of people is like, oh, you should guys take over like the whole place, you know, like and it will be like, I don't know, 4,000 square foot. And it's like, no, you know, and it's like, this is crazy, you know, like, because we did double our inventory, but with that, it comes more responsibilities and more chaotic and more cleaning. And then it's like, well, it's sometimes doesn't bring you more business. It just brings you more work, but it's just like flip the coin and you hope for the best. Right. And that's what we basically were doing.
Oh yeah. Well, there's a Latin market or a Mexican market just on Douglas Street here in Victoria that I go to. Mm-hmm. And it's like what you described. They have a million things in this tiny place, you know, and there's this one lady behind the counter but there's always folks in there and it's all, you know, whatever you need, she can find it. And there's the wall of dried peppers and there's, you know, it's an amazing place, but you're right. It's just like you fit it all in. And there's everything you need is in there, you know?
Yeah.
But but I've been to St. John's just once, right? I was there in 1996. So like a long time ago. And
now you have where to stay though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When we come back. Well, because we've been doing that thing that you did. Like we've been sort of plotting out, well, we would have to rent a car and we could drive from here because I want to go all the way across country. And find a place that'll rent me a car for that length of time and let me drive that far, you know, to go there and back because it's difficult because it's a long, long way. When I was in St. John's, and I was only out there for like 10 days, but that sense of you're in another world, like it is not, oh, just off the coast, there's this island. There you go. You are out there. And
you're on your own, literally.
Yeah. And it's its own thing.
Yes.
You know? And I remember that, like I read the history of the place when they voted to join Canada, and it was hit and miss whether or not they were just going to stay on their own or join the states. It's like because they're far away. Like it is not like, you know,
we're closer to Ireland than to Canada.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it felt it, especially on the edge there on the St. John's side, like you go out to Cape Spear and they say, okay, if you can focus, you might be able to see Ireland maybe, but yeah, yes. It's because that's where you're pointing. But yeah, it's bizarre. Well, and so when we had Orange Boot Bakery in the strip mall there was Harry's mm-hmm. place that had Indian spices. And I just remember this, it's like what you described. It's like they would just get these shipments of stuff and it would just be like boxes everywhere. And you know, cause it's like, if I'm getting it, I'm getting a lot of it cause shipping is expensive, you know? And, yeah. And it, like, what's it, how's it been sourcing the ingredients you need and getting them out to St. John's? Like where did you establish, or how did you establish the contacts to get all this food up to the island?
So to me, basically, literally, like I reach every Latin supplier in Canada that I could find. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, they wouldn't consider Newfoundland. And basically, or they will sell you, but it's like you're in your own in transportation terms. But we're not that big to say to be noticeable for many companies or transportation either, because we wouldn't fill a whole trailer, for example, right? So anyways, what I near down to as closest points, which it will be Mississauga, Ontario, Quebec, and Montreal. Okay. So those are the places that now is basically that I'm getting products from. The particular point that all of them have is that all of them they're run from Latin people.
Okay.
So basically there's been a lot of miscommunication for how business is done. Because whether it's a huge meal thing, time is a huge thing, and because the transportation is separate than them, honestly, it's been hectic.
Sure.
You know, it's just like, to put you an example, one of our orders, that it was 2 pallets, it was delivered wrongfully twice.
Ooh.
And it lasts 3 weeks, I mean, lost somewhere in the Atlantic. I'm not exaggerating. That was the answer. It was like, it's somewhere in the Atlantic. This company that we bought that time, they put frozen items in our dry pallet. So 3 weeks lost. You could imagine when we receive it, it was like fruit flies, mold, blah, 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 blah. So those kind of things do happen.
Yeah.
Then you have some orders that is like to the date where they should be, no problem, normal miscommunication. But every order honestly takes me about 14 days back and forth. You fill it up properly, what I need, because I just don't want to bring whatever, for example.
Sure.
Not
sure.
That I know the products, but honestly, I could almost certainly tell you that I know every product that we put in the store, because I want people to know that we care, same, and that our business is our kitchen, mm-hmm. not the products. We need the products for us to make authentic food. But our business is our food, our kitchen, you know, what we present. Even if we're just a takeout, like I feel like everything in the menu, you know, when we open saying, like I remember writing a story and saying, why did I put every item, every meal on the menu? And it will represent a person. If I had a conversation with you that you told me, oh, my grandma used to make this and blah, 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 and I know how to make it, I will put it in the menu if I know that it will sell good, you know, and I will tell a story about it, blah, blah, blah. So same with the ingredients. So saying everything that is from Mexico, it has to have a particular reason to be on the store. Either it's very popular, it has been like authentic product that hasn't last changed since, at least since I'm alive. So 40, 50 years, that is the same. So it's like, and or that it's saying like, I bring products that I know that saying like 5 countries use it, you know, because we have very similar products in South America and in Mexico. Because we want to make sure that it sells, right? So we don't bring a lot of things just to fill a pallet. We do fill a pallet with about 60 boxes at a time. But many times I bring 3 pieces of something, for
right.
example.
Yeah.
And like my sister just went to Mexico and she brought like 2 luggage full of things that handpicked it. And I was like, I want to have this specific candies and I want to have this and that. We bring even like some pottery for some customers, but it was just like handpicked it and it was 1 piece, 2 piece, you know, and they were like mesmerized because it's like, it's a risk, right? You don't know if it's going to be allowed to be cross the border. You don't know if it's one of them saying like the lid, it broke, you know, but like, to me, I always tell my sister, I want to bring the experience to know, like even I've been living now 10 years in Canada, but it's just like, you're always going to be a citizen from your country.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I feel like we are blessed that in Mexico we can kind of go some sort of often. But there is other countries that they say, I haven't been in my country for 8 years and I haven't tried this food for 8 years, you know, or I couldn't go to, I don't know, my grandma's funeral or my grandma's birthday. And here it is, an ingredient that I haven't eaten since I left my country. So it's like I do research for every ingredient and everything. And then we brought those ones. And I always like, I feel like because Brad, he's Canadian, I want it to be something that he will feel comfortable offering as well. So it's like saying, like, what I can tell you, like different of many ethnic stores, like our store feels like an like a Canadian store at the same time, because, you know, in a lot of ethnic stores, it's going to smell funny.
Yeah.
It's going to be boxes on the floor. It's going to be packed. It's going to be like, just like kind of like, oh, whatever. That's how we do it in our country, you know? Yeah, like in Mexico, you sell things on the floor, but it's like, well, we're in Canada. It has to look pretty. It has to be clean. It has to be up to code, you know? So we have that, if that makes any sense. You know, it's full. It's like everywhere, but it's pretty. It's welcoming. You know, like I remember like a lot of times going to other stores, and I always said to Brad, I could never imagine going to a store where it's like, you're like, kind of like, what are you doing here? Because you're not Indian, for example, right? Or Chinese. It's like, well, everybody should be welcome. So I feel at our store, everybody can sense that. It's like, do you want to try something Latin? You want to try something Mexican? Feel more than welcome to come. You know, like this store is for everybody. It's not only for our community, because I believe it's like, well, we all belong, you know? And so, because especially Latin community is not that big in here.
Right. I was gonna ask about that. Like to reflect back that the video that you shared with me, that's the impression that I got as well. It's like, you know, there's room to move about, and you know, the shelving's all organized, and just those kind of things. What got me, or the impression that I got by watching the video, is like, oh, Claudia's turning over product here, right? Like it's laid out, but it's not like, well, there's this corner of mystery items that, you know, has been there since opening day, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It's sort of like it's going. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. And you had just mentioned there that the Latin community in St. John's isn't very large. I guess, how does it, is it smaller than say in Saskatchewan and in Regina?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yes, like saying, as we are more in Mont-Pearl, which basically in perspective from St. John's, it's 16 kilometers. For us, it feels pretty close and you're there in 40 minutes. But from the locals, it's like, oh, it's in another city.
Oh,
they feel
yeah.
like that, right?
Yeah.
Because on it's like, oh, I grew up in Paradise. And it's like, well, Paradise is one block from us, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, what, it's a neighborhood from us? It's a city for them.
Yeah.
So basically all that this part, it's called metro area, which it is St. John's, Paradise, Mont Pearl, CBS, Holyrood, St. Phillips, blah, 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 blah. But it's like 142 kilometers.
Okay.
Diameter. So, and in the city that we are, it's only 24,000 people. A lot of Latins live around there. But I will tell you probably what I could say. I will believe that it's like 3,000 people only in all over those population of, and it should be like about 220,000 people. Like size-wise, geographically speaking, it's big, but population is not big. If that makes any sense? And a lot of we hear a lot of the stories, like there is Latin people, but like that literally they have been here 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they say like, oh, I last 10 years without knowing somebody from Latin America, because they didn't used to have, people didn't want to come to Newfoundland to live. That wasn't like a common occurrence, but life circumstances have made people come back or choose it as a destination. A lot of them, like the university I'm here, I understand it's the cheapest one in Canada. And then there is a lot of kind of like treatments with like deals. I don't know how to say it. With saying like with Colombia, it's very easy if you're a Colombian student to come here.
Oh, okay.
Or there is a lot of work for people from Venezuela and Argentinians So it's way faster than another province. So you have a lot of people from those countries, but that's in the last 10 years. And then after pandemic, that make a lot of people decide more here as a destination. And then when the Ukrainian war started happening, a lot of refugees for South America as well, from Honduras especially, they start coming out, driving all the way from Mexico, the States, passing. And they end up here. Because what I understand, there used to be like a big agreement with those countries, with Montreal.
Okay.
The government of Montreal, they said, if you don't get more funding from the government, we can't accept more refugees. So they stopped taking them. And basically in the last 2 years, they've been sending them now to Newfoundland, comparing to all the past years in Canada.
Okay.
Oh, so a lot of refugees. Yeah. And I just know those because I have two refugees working with us. And I have another person from Cuba, for example, saying that it was like the only way to enter into the country. It was like she's married with a Canadian person, and it's like the only way to be accepted to come to Canada, it was to apply as a permanent resident.
Mm-hmm.
They will always deny the entrance as a visitor. So a lot of people, either for circumstances or life circumstances, but they end up in Newfoundland.
Okay.
Well, and then when they start comparing, it's like feasible somewhat.
Yeah. It used to be like that in Saskatchewan, like 10 years ago or whatever, that the foreign worker rules or whatever, they did mm-hmm. something special in that in Saskatchewan. So a lot more people were coming to Saskatchewan.
Yeah, that's what happened to me.
Yeah, because it was easier, right? Like our baker Giacomo came from Italy.
Yeah.
And I could sponsor him. I could sponsor him by filling out a form.
And it was very easy and fast. Yeah.
And it was like, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. When I apply, I remember the average time for a Mexican person to come to Saskatchewan, it was 3 months.
Yeah.
And that's it. You have your paperwork and then you can come with a 2 years working visa.
Right.
But I remember, especially when I applied, there was a strike in the government, government employees.
Okay.
There was a strike that it lasted 7 months. That's why I remember they stopped my application. That's why it took so long. So literally everything that happens somewhere, right, in the country, it affects. It's interesting. I keep following because I was doing my permanent residence application and then the citizenship. But like saying, like, for example, Saskatchewan still is one of the easiest provinces to apply to work.
Right.
And there is a lot of work, or in Alberta, you know. But yeah, like saying, like, Newfoundland right now, it's great if you come here as a student.
Right.
That's like a lot of people, like every week we have somebody that is like, oh, yeah, I came here as a student. To this school or that other school, and it's affordable
mm-hmm.
and it's faster. And when I say faster, it's like instead of waiting more than a year, it's in a couple of months where you receive an answer.
Wow. That's something I'm still learning a lot about, is just the, you know, all these borders and rules and just for normal folks to move around is not easy, you know.
Yeah.
It's so hard. It really is. My goodness. And so when you came to Canada, was that straight to Regina? Was that sort of mm-hmm. your first stop?
Yep.
And when was that compared to when we worked together at Sky? Because that was 2016 was yep. then.
2013, I came.
Wow.
Here.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. It's been exactly 10 years. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. La Bodega. I don't know if you remember La Bodega, the restaurant.
I do.
They make all my paperwork. Literally, I just have to have my passport after they see my resume and everything. And then it's like, I just have to tramit my passport and that's it.
Yeah. Were you cooking in Mexico like already? And so when you came up, what were you doing, I guess, there and growing up and stuff before you came to Canada? Like, what was your path there?
Well, I studied international business first. And then it's like when I was there, that always says that we're not rich. He used to say, like, it's like the only inheritance is education. So he was very young. So it's like, study something, you know? And I didn't want to make a master. And I thought that I didn't want to study for long. But anyways, living on my own, I used to start, I just start liking cooking more and more and more and more. And everybody was foreign, all my friends. So I was always kind of like bringing the nicer dishes and the more creative on making budget, how to make a feed for the week. And then long story short, I searched for a cooking school, found it. And that was in Tijuana, border with San Diego. Off I go, 3 months after I finished international business, to another city to study for another 3 years. The degrees, hospitality, service, and cooking degree, something like that. And then since I started there, I start cooking. I was working in the university in something unrelated. It was like environmental something. But I was like always working in the food industry. I was like always cooking in some sort of restaurants, bakeries, coffee places, sushi places. But before the last months before moving to Canada, because I was supposed to be coming only for 3 to 6 months, because I was seeing somebody back in that time. I used to study, I used to teach in university for the cooking career and for the nutritionist career, like theoretical classes. And then I used to be served in the valley where they grew most of the wine in Mexico for American tourists, because okay. I used to speak English back in then. So I was a server. And then I used to run a taco shop in another city. And I used to work for one of my uncles that had like a business in San Diego. So I had 4 jobs before coming here.
Wow. Yeah. And then you went to La Bodega, which, you know, it's so funny. I was just talking to somebody just last week in Colorado that opened up a bakery in a big house. And I was, and renovated this huge old house. And then I was thinking of La Bodega, and I was describing it to her, but I forgot the name of the place. And it changed names a couple of times, but I had this picture in my mind. And you mentioned it. Yeah, that's your first job in Saskatchewan. Oh my gosh. Yeah. And so, yeah. And then from there, you got in with sort of Milton at the golf club and then Sky. Was that kind of how it went?
No, I worked at La Bodega. Then I went to Tangerine. I worked in Tangerine for...
With Amy, yeah.
Yeah, for many years. Amy, I worked probably like 6 years.
Okay.
But I started a few hours. And then there used to be a health store, Eat Healthy Foods. I don't know if you ever met it at Cathedral. So basically, I used to work there like 1 in the morning to 4 in the morning because the owner trusts me, and it was just like, go do this too, make the prep, because their food was just grab and go. And then with Amy, I would go at 5 to 8 in the morning and at Bodega at 9 in the morning. I used to work 90 hours a week when I just started, I remember.
90 hours.
Everything was walking distance. And I used to live upstairs, La Bodega, you know, and I don't know, I was just loving what I was doing.
Yeah.
And to have the opportunity and the trust of the people. And then Milton came along. I work at another grab food to go, that it was Best Food Forward. I don't know if you ever heard about that project, that it was like Meals to Go, that it was from...
No, I don't know about that one. I don't think...
From Ginger, that one lasts 3 years in Regina, and then it become like a mostly like a kitchen that people used to lease from, like all the food trucks used to lease in there.
Yeah. Okay.
That's where I met Saltine, for example.
Actually. Sure. Yeah.
So, anyways, I was always working everywhere. And then I don't know if you remember Mariana yes. Brito.
Yep. I do.
So she introduced me to Jonathan from Crave, and then. When he needed a cook, I cooked for Jonathan. I was at Crave and I was at Wascana, because that's when I started dating Brad, and a friend of him was very close with Milton.
Oh, okay.
And one time they were talking and, well, I need somebody, blah, blah, blah. I'm opening a restaurant. And fortunately at that time, he was like, you want somebody solid? You want somebody reliable that it's going to kind of like establish the restaurant? You need to meet this girl. And I went to meet Milton at Wascana, and that's how he offered me a job. But basically this person has never seen me even cook, you know, that he was just a very good friend with Brad.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
And Yeah, and then Milton trusts me, he trusts me, and basically that's how we start, and that's how I met the whole team.
And I just, my memory of that and that short time we worked together was this, it all makes sense now, because I met you, and well, here's this young woman, and she's very, very nice and pleasant and stuff. And then I'd watch you work, and you were just like this awesome cook. Like, just, I never saw anybody sort of that calm, but that organized, and boom, 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 and all this stuff's getting done. And you had like, I think 2 square feet to work in. You're making your green sauce for the chilaquiles and stuff. And mm-hmm. and then when you were making ravioli in this little corner, and you're just saying, oh yeah, just making ravioli. And it's like, you barely had room for the machine to make the pasta,
yeah,
you know?
I was used to it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're so used to that. It's like, oh, okay. This is a whole other level of professional cooking going on here. I was super impressed. I still remember that quite a bit.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So before you ever come to Canada, and then all the different things you did in Canada before getting to Newfoundland, like, you're more than ready to like open up a kitchen and start doing your own thing, I guess. What's the restaurant side or the kitchen side of Mamacita like? Because in the video, I sort of saw a little bit going on, but I saw the store, you know, the market, the store, more yeah. than anything. Yeah. What's the kitchen side of the business?
Honestly, it's not like a super fancy kitchen, but it's yeah. like great to make, basically sky's the limit kind of thing. You know, like we have, like I said, like we have like a huge walk-in fridge. That literally, I have never worked in a walk-in fridge that big, for example, because that was just a coincidence. So we have like one oven, one big mixer, like, or 3 fryers, like a kitchen, like a stove, and 2 microwaves, mm-hmm. and a bunch of freezers. And that's all what we need. Because I remember when I was thinking about the menu, we needed fryers to make kind of like a lot of the dishes and to make it fast. And I needed a mixer. I honestly, just with a mixer, I knew that I was going to be able to produce in amounts, you know. And literally, it's like the mixer that you used to have at Sky, that size, and that mixer goes almost all day, every day, because everything is made by hand.
Right.
It's like that. It's like having that one, it is speed up so much our product, because everything that it comes from the kitchen, it is very home taste, you know. Mm-hmm. There is nothing fancy. Everything, even if it's everything from scratch, there is nothing luxurious. It's like everything that a home cooking could be making, we make it, and we're able to make it because ingredients are real, you know. Like saying, like the chiles, all the chiles that we grab, it's like, oh well, they're like about 2 months old, and then we're able to make a bunch of salsas. And the trick part is just like it's very simple, you know, because like a lot of people think that it's very composed kitchen, but it's like, well, it's just, yeah, it might have 14 ingredients, but we just put them in a pot. So that's how we can have, you know. There was I'll put you an example. We make, saying, like 12 kind of marmalades, and pretty much I do whatever it's available. I try to kind of like have like some sort of like line of flavors. But there is nothing, it doesn't have to be specific in a way. And I remember a customer saying, it's just, once again, he's like, I just don't understand how come you sell so cheap and you're still making money. This doesn't feel right. You know, it's just like, it's such a good word of value for what you're offering.
Right.
And my answer, it was just like, we cook very smart. I said, like, honestly, probably if you put in accountability, we have like 5% of waste of our kitchen. Mm-hmm. And that, I swear, that's it. You know, everything, it's use. Like everything. And when I say everything, it's everything. You know, like it's like the peels, with the peels, we make everything from scratch. And we make all our stocks, same. But we, in order as well to keep it simple, saying like all our sides, they're vegan and gluten-free. And because it's like, if you were from home, it's going to be Mexican rice, refried beans, olla beans, which is the same beans without blending it. And that's 90% of our dishes. And then it goes French fries, which people might think, oh, that's like a Canadian fusion, but it's not. We eat a lot of French fries in Mexico, you know, and then you could have a burger, for example, at a restaurant that is going to be having char chile, which a lot of people think, oh, Mexico don't eat burgers, but we do, you know, so we have a burger. We have cod. It's delicious here in Newfoundland.
Sure.
So we have fish tacos that are made with cod. And then, but we put it in beer butter, which that would be traditional from the part that I used to live in Mexico. And then we make our tortillas, which is one of the things that it takes us the most time, but it's very simple. It has three ingredients. And once again, as long as I have the mixer, that's what it takes time, you know? And it's just like mixing lard, flour, water, salt, and that's it, you know? So it's like everything is very simple. Like I said, we have like 15 marmalades, but it's like, well, it was 15 different kind of fruits maybe, but we use the same chili for all of them. So when you go to the store, it's like, oh my God, like there's so much variety. Yes, indeed. But it's everything has the same process, you know, and everything's thrown in the oven, for example. So it is a small, the space that we have, but it's very practical and it's possible. It's like, it seems for the customer, like, oh my God, how do they do this production? What is like, well, everything. And we recycle the same ingredients, you know, like the salsa that we sell in front at the front is a salsa that it goes with one of our best seller, and it's a salsa that it goes with our tacos, and all the dishes have the same salad, which is truly the same salad that you will eat in every household in Mexico, you know, we just make it our recipes.
Right. Sure. Sure. Just, I got on this thing yesterday watching Jacques Pepin videos, like, you know, the French chef, Jacques Pepin, do you know him?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And his whole thing in the series that I was watching is very much, you know, inexpensive cooking, simple dishes, you know, and just, you know, make it yourself. If you have a you know, a can of beans and an onion and, you know, maybe some chives, you're set, you know, some stock, you're good to go. Right. And, mm-hmm. and just the super simple set of ingredients, yet, you know, and you can just do it fast when you know what you're doing. And it's just what you're describing is, well, yeah, when you know what you're doing and you're making your traditional dishes, and you're organized like you are, you know, you can make this thing go, you know, and that just sounds amazing. And, you know, and that idea of we're going to use everything. It's sort of like by the time you bring food to Newfoundland, it's cost you so much to get it there. It's like, you've got to use every single thing. You know, you can't waste anything because it's the transport that's going to kill you. So you can't afford to transport things and not use it, you know?
Exactly. Or the things in here, what I have noticed saying, like in here, I don't know, maybe, and it must happen with everywhere, you know, but it takes so long to take the things here that they go to waste very fast. Say, yes. You buy bananas and it goes boom, like this, apples, like cantaloupes, pineapples. Mm-hmm. So, because I remember we last 3 months without finding a house. So we have to camp for 3 months. And I was like, this is impossible that I have to go to the groceries every 2 days because our food goes to rotten and it molds because there's so much humidity in here. So we have learned that, right? So we don't risk things that it's like, well, if it's gonna go bad so fast, we try to avoid them, you know, and then, or if we're gonna go bad too fast, we'll do something to make it preserve longer, you know, and
right
and it just works right, you know. And but that's the beauty, we have like a small menu. You have like about 9 items that you can order from the menu, and whatever you order, it takes like about 6 minutes. So mm-hmm. everybody's come kind of like in and out, not in a long time. But we also have 6 specials, which is like kind of like a small like hot table, and that's by the piece that they're always going to be hot. And then you can always order tacos. So basically, if something is in a good price or something, it's like, it doesn't have to be even in big amounts. But if I find something that it's good, that it's going to be saying like something that is like, oh my God, this is unique, we make it and we'll offer for tacos that day or that week, you know? Yeah. And then,
yeah.
So that I feel like that keeps like people, if you love our food, it's going to be like, oh my God, what did they have today? You know, there is a lot of like saying like Mexican people or Guatemalan people that they're like, which dishes, I don't want to try something from the menu and I don't want to have nothing from the hot grab and go, and I don't want to have a taco per se. Which is two can I eat today?
Yeah.
So we'll sell it by half liters or a liter or by the kilo. because that's how in our countries, that's how it sells. You know, you go to many places that are grab and go and they sell it to you by the kilo.
Right.
They don't tell you, oh, how many tacos you want, right? And so that's better value for you as a customer, because if you have leftovers, you don't feel like you overpriced, you know, or you are starving and instead of spending a lot of money and still eating in your car. So it's like, that's what we kind of like, we try to always say, like, basically whatever, literally, either you want to like a full meal or you want to build it yourself or you want something different. It's like, we'll work around, what do you need? What do you want? What are you looking for?
Yeah,
you're vegan, you're vegetarian, you're gluten-free, you're starving, you're not, you're living solo, you have a potty, you know, like literally, you know, it's just like anything. Because I love developing menus as well. You know, I love like accommodate personal needs. I think that's the beauty. When you own your business, I feel like if you enjoy it, it's just like you can create.
Yeah.
Saying I'm not the best baker at all. But for example, like when somebody orders a cake, I'm like, oh my God, so a new cake. You know, like last week I have 3 cakes. I know that that's very little. And that's, I wish that would be like a big part of our business, which is still not. But it's like, I'm like, people are liking our cakes, you know, like people are ordering and people are repeating. And then it's like, I feel that we're going to get to that point where it's going to be, people will identify as a kitchen, as a pastries area, you know, like Brad loves to do butchering. We've been offering like meats, cuts of meats. Sometimes we sell, sometimes we don't, you know, but it's like, I don't know, like it seems to be we're all over the place. But to me, it's like, well, we have the experience and when you're what we do, we can do it.
Well, I don't think you're all over the place. What I hear from you is we're here, we're committed, we've got the space, we have the tools, we're gonna feed the people around us. Let's figure out what it is they want, and I have stuff to share, but I'm also listening. You know, what do you need? Mm-hmm. And we'll do it that way, right? But just even with what you're describing, it's like, you know, if it makes sense to take a container home with you. And instead of buying individual tacos, yeah, of course you take the container home. That's what works for you. It's like you're feeding the people and you're meeting them sort of where they are and what they need, right? Like that's a beautiful, yeah. A beautiful thing. And so the response from the people in the neighborhood, how has it been sort of a year in?
Awesome. Yeah. We have our regulars, fortunately. Like we have one particular person saying that she goes like almost like up to clock, saying like she goes every Sunday.
Yeah.
And sometimes she goes on Saturday and it's like, oh, I was craving blah blah or this or that, but I'll still come tomorrow. Like literally she comes every Sunday. I swear, like you know that from 4:30 to 5:30 she will show up, you know. And then I never ask where she lives. I know that she lives in St. John's, so she drives probably at least 20 kilometers to just go get whatever she wants. You know, she loves her cookies, go grabs always 1 or 2 packets of cookies, but she like religiously goes every Sunday. There is another boy that in there that's saying like he's getting married in July next year, and he's like already booked his wedding with us, for example, that because it's like, oh my God, I don't even know if I want to be able to pay my kids college with all the money that I spend with you guys, you know, because sometimes he goes 4 times a week, you know. So that's the kind of like experience that we've been having already. There is like upstairs where we are, there is like an apartment, and there is 2 boys from Guatemala. They live up there. So one of them, he goes to a restaurant 4 times a week, for example. Every time that we have new products, he'll be the first customer, you know, because he can tell, I guess, that, hey, the truck is here and I haven't even put it on the shelf when he's already, you know, like kind of like getting it. And then sometimes it's like, oh, I don't know what it's in your French fries, for example, that I'll have to get them. And it's like, sometimes he goes 5 times a week just for French fries, you know, but he's like, I'm just thinking like, why don't you just make French fries? You live upstairs, you know, but, you know, so things like that. There is a big group. It's like 12 boys from Guatemala that they're like in a working visa for 2 years. And they said that they live like, I don't know, like 1 kilometer from us. And every Saturday they will be, I guess that they get paid on Friday, for example. So on every second Saturday, they will go and they'll go do a round, and you can always know, oh, they're going to spend their $25 in something, you know, like, And yeah. It's a group of six of them that they will go religiously, you know, or every time that we get new products, there is this guy that lives close in the neighborhood and he will go buy his half liter Coke.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like people make it as a must stop shop. Some of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, that's great. Oh, so cool. So cool.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I want to ask you before I let you go and probably get back to work because you're a very busy person. But can you tell us a bit about sort of the name and the story behind the name of your store?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the logo is my mom when she was 19 years old. That logo came from a picture that became a paint of her.
Okay.
Because a friend says like, oh, I really like how beautiful you look in that. Do you mind if I paint it first? So I grew up watching that paint. And I always used to think how beautiful my mom looks. When we were in December last year, that's when we find the place that we are at now. And I remember we were having a fire, Brad and I, thinking about the project. And then it's like, and Brad says like, how should we call it? And right away I said, Mamacita. And he's like, oh, I like it. And he's like, but why Mamacita, you know? And I'm like, because I like everything that the passion that I have for food, you know? And now that I think in perspective, my mom has teached me so much before the career. And she has worked with me in events. She has always supported me. She always sent me recipes. She always guides me through, you know, like, I don't know, all that passion that I have when it's like family gathers, it's because of her. And I respect her in many aspects. So it was just like a way of saying thank you, you know, and I feel like that's just kind of like a proud, you know, I'm the only of my sibling. Everybody fortunately is doing pretty good in what they're doing, but I'm the only one that has their own business. So right. To me, it's like a payback. I feel very proud where I am, what they do. You know, and then saying like one of our products is saying like the handmade tortillas, but I have never made handmade tortillas before putting the business, you know. I never made so many tamales in my life. I make twice tamales and now we sell a bunch of tamales, you know, for example, but that it was like a must have. So anyways, where I'm from, flour tortillas is huge. So my mommy was like researching and checking and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, that's the least I can do, you know.
Sure.
So. That's where it comes the name. And it was kind of like a surprise for her. I think with my siblings, everybody kind of like when the designer was developing the adaptations of colors and things like that, they all kind of like wear both. And that was kind of like a present for her into her birth and to her. No, it wasn't her birth. It was like a Christmas present, you know?
Wow.
And yeah, like honestly, and up to now, when we open, like they came here with us, they stay 4 months to make it possible, right? Because you have the craziness of the kids, they're not in daycare, we're here by ourselves, construction is going, Brad is working like 18 hours to make it happen, you know? And yeah, like they're in just kind of like a very, like very involved into our business. Now my little sister, she can work online. So she has come three times now. And she comes and gives us a hand with the boys, with life, you know?
Nice. Oh, wow.
And then Mamacita as well means like, for whoever speaks Spanish, it means like little mama.
Uh-huh.
And then it's also kind of like, it could mean it's related to sexy. If you're very hot, you know, like it's hot, if somebody wants to kind of like flirt with you, they will say, oh, Mamacita. You know? So it's kind of like synonym of only goods.
Yes.
So that was, to me, it was like a name that it was easy to learn and just kind of like relate only in good things.
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. Well, and I'm thrilled that your mom's been able to come up and be part of the place and see the place and that kind of thing too. Right. Like that's,
Yeah. They're hands on, you know, yeah. Like when we start, I used to bring 5 kilos rolled tortillas just ready to press and cook. Every night, and they would be like, as soon as I arrived from work, it's just like, give us the 5 kilos, you know. And my mom and him is like hands on, and like every time that they have like that time that they come, they bring like a bunch of things for us to resell, because literally it's still like a small project where it's like I said, it's like we bring pottery for a family when they say it's just that the beans taste so much better in this pottery that it's made by hand. And it's like we brought them from them, you know. We bring aprons that is like, well, just 10 aprons and every apron is going to be different.
Yeah.
Just 10 blouses, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They make it happen. You know, like we ran out of stickers and they're more affordable in Mexico. And then it's like they're sending me the stickers that my sister wanted to, you know, it's just like, it just seems crazy.
Yeah.
But it just makes so much sense just to make it feasible for us a business. Everybody's involved, basically.
Oh, totally. Oh, it really does. I have this picture in my head of you putting the word out. It's like, oh, someone's come up from Mexico, brought a shipment with them in their suitcase. Come and get it, you know?
Yeah.
And all the regulars say, oh.
Exactly.
Mom is here. What did she bring?
Exactly. So, yeah. Pretty much.
Oh, yes. That's the best. It's the best. Oh, wow. Well, this has been such a thrill, Claudia. It's been so nice to see you again. I've missed you so much.
You know where to find us. You know where to visit, hopefully.
Oh, we're going to do it. We're going to get up there for sure. Cause it's, I've wanted to show Cindy that area since I was there like 30 years ago, and we're still trying to make it that way, but we'll get up to see you. And we have real incentive now to come and visit you for sure before your kids get too big. Okay. So thank you so much.
No, thank you. Take care. Say hi to him.
Yeah, I will. That was a real thrill for me. You know, if you haven't been to Newfoundland and if you haven't been to St. John's, first off, you should go. You should really go visit. It's an amazing place. I haven't been there in 30 years, but I think about it every year and I want to go back every year because it's unlike anywhere else I've ever been in the world. St. John's is so cool because it's old, like it's real old. It's 500 years old. It's one of the, you know, the first settlements, the first European settlements in this area of the world, you know, and also it's remote and it feels remote. Like I live on an island here and I don't feel anywhere near as remote as I did when I lived out or when I visited out in St. John's. And so this idea, this thought of like, how do you stock and run a Latin or a Mexican grocer and restaurant in Mount Pearl, Newfoundland, like that blows me away. And so they're doing it and they're figuring it out and they're making it work. And just hearing Claudia tell the stories of the people, like her regulars and the folks that she takes care of, it warms my heart to know that it's like, hey, we're doing our thing. We're bringing our flavors and our foods to you. And then there are people here that will find us because they desperately want this stuff. And then I get to take care of them. Oh my gosh. It just fills me up hearing that story. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope that you were inspired by the conversation and were inspired by the talk and that it gives you some ideas of things that you can do at your bakery and at your shop and in your community. And if it does, I'd love to hear from you. Send me an email, mark@riseuppod.com, and let me know what you think of this talk or any conversation that's been on the show. Would love to hear from you. In the meantime, we've got big show 200 coming up next. Can't wait to share that with you. Until then, work hard, bake lots, go to bbga.org, check out the Bakery Leadership Circle, apply if you want, if it's for you. Work hard, bake lots. Happy baking. Bye-bye.